Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, barreling along we go here on a Wednesday afternoon. A hot and steamy one at that here in the Big Buff. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Shope has the day off today. Joining me right now on the Wester Hotline, NHL draft analyst for thedraftanalyst.com, as well as a contributor to the Sporting News. He is Steve Kornianos joining us here. Hi, Steve. Good afternoon. It's Chris here. Mike has the day off. How are you, man?
Good, Chris. What's going on?
How much? I'm wondering, it's a little awkward. We've talked, I think, a time or two before, but for me to ask you how old you are doesn't seem like something that I should do it at the outset here, but I'm wondering if you remember the 99 Stanley Cup Finals at all.
Well, of course I do. Yeah, I'm 45, man. I go back to Mike Foligno and those old school favorites. So,
okay.
I'm good.
Good deal, yeah. Well, we're kind of rehashing here 20 years ago. It happens to be my wedding day as well. So, like, I have a weirder story than just where I was watching it, you know, because I went away on my honeymoon without even knowing what had happened. I don't know. What do you have any recollection of watching that night and a reaction to what ended up happening?
Yeah, I was really frustrated because, you know, I'm not a Sabres fan, but I was definitely pulling for the Sabres that series. And, you know, I think that the two previous playoffs, specifically 97 and 98, saw a lot of disputed goals, a lot of series being decided, momentum-changing goals that were called off and vice versa. So when I saw that happening, you know, considering how, you know, close the series was, you know, Dallas was a big team and and it was disappointing that the league basically allowed it to happen, and in a way, I guess you could say the Sabres kind of fell on the sword for the rest of the league because of that goal. We saw a lot of changes made in the way that the league reviews things, and but even still to this day, they still have problems. So,
yeah,
definitely a tough pill to swallow, that's for sure.
Right. Well, moving to the present day and really the future, because that's what the draft is about. There's a couple guys that probably will almost certainly play in the league right away, and then, you know, the rest will take anywhere from a year to three or four to sort of hash out what exactly these teams accomplish at the draft in Vancouver starting on Friday night, Steve. Right at the very top, and I know the most recent piece that I saw of yours addresses the question that I think maybe still remains, although it seems like it's tilting pretty heavily in Hughes' favor, but Hughes or Kako at number one. I thought the World Championships made a pretty strong case for Kako to maybe, you know, make this more of a question what New Jersey is going to do at number one overall.
Yeah, I think what that World Championship did, and maybe, you know, a couple of tournaments before that, it made Kako more of a mainstream, you know, figure, not just some random European kid who was doing well in Europe and no one had heard too much about him. Whereas you heard all year long about Jack Hughes. The thing is, though, is that you're looking at two record-setting draft resumes, right, for each player, one in Finland, the other one in America. The thing is, Hughes is a center, though, so I think gives him a little bit of an advantage because he does make everybody around him better. I know it's a cliche that people use a lot, but when you have that type of speed and vision where, you know, you attract opponents like a magnet, it opens up the ice for your teammates. You know, not that Kako doesn't expand the ice for his teammates, is that, you know, the fact that Hughes is a center, I think he has more of an impact on the game beyond just what in his own little radius, but beyond that as well. So I think he's got the slightest of edges, but he's still an edge.
Is there almost no chance that Kako will play center in the NHL? Is it too early to know that for sure, Steve?
I don't know. To be honest with you, look at Elias Pettersson. I mean, we watched him play since he was 16, 15. He was always playing wing. And then he comes to Vancouver and they play him at center and he's probably going to win the Calder Trophy. So I don't think that it'll stop, you know, Kako being a natural winger. I don't think it's going to stop any team that drafts him from at least experimenting to play center, because he did, in fact, play center this year when he played with CCS in the finish league. So we'll see. But to me, he's a natural goal scorer. I think you've got to keep him on the wing.
Steve Corianos, NHL draft analyst for thedraftanalyst.com and the Sporting News is on the West Hur Hotline previewing Friday's round one. And well, maybe we'll get a little deeper than that, too, as we go here on WGR. On Hughes, Steve, like I feel like the only question I've asked anyone about this draft is comparing these two. How about Hughes? Like we tend to view almost anyone at the top of a draft, especially an American player in the draft, to Eichel from 4 years ago now. And we did that with Austin Matthews, and we'll probably continue to do that for maybe as long as Jack Eichel is the elite player on the Sabres that he is. How does Hughes measure up to Matthews, Eichel, even McDavid, if you want?
Well, I mean, in terms of the American play, they all played at the same program, the NCDT, and Hughes broke all their records, and he broke them with about 20 games left on his schedule. So there's a good bet that he's going to be the top-scoring player in that program's history for the foreseeable future. He's not like Eichel. He's not as big as powerful as Eichel or Matthews. He's a little bit smaller. He's kind of a cross between Pat Kane and Clayton Keller. Those two play wing, but, of course, Keller played a little bit of center at the same program. And, if you talk to Hughes, he said he grew up really idolizing Pat Kane, the way that he handles the puck and his edge work and his skating and his vision, his creativity, things like that. So, he's small. He's on the smaller side, about 5'10", $165, $170. So I think when he does play in the NHL, his size isn't that much of an issue. But the thing that he has that is comparable to McDavid, to me, is the hockey sense, the vision. His ability to spot the open man. He's obviously a phenomenal skater. I mean, Connor is a bigger guy. He's got a more powerful stride, whereas Hughes is a little bit more light on his skates, but he's also a road runner as well. So I think when you watch him play with the puck, the way he dangles and controls the play, he can pivot under pressure, little things like that. It's more of a Pat Kane, Clayton Keller kind of a combination. Okay.
So no question, those two guys, like I said at the very outset here, they're playing in the NHL next year, unless something really radically unforeseen, injury, whatever. Like those guys are playing for probably the Devils and Rangers next year, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this is, like I said, the Hughes size thing should be an issue because Pat Kane was the same playing height and weight back in 08 when he won the Calder for the Blackhawks. So I don't see it that big of a deal.
Okay. Beyond that, we're hearing a lot that from 3 to 10 is kind of a scramble. That there's everybody's got their rankings. You certainly have yours, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of uniformity there, and that there's comparable talent from maybe 3 to 10 or so. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're looking at probably about 5 to 6 players from one program, the NTDP, and about 4 players from the WHL, 1 defenseman and 3 centers. But it is a center-heavy foot, like top 12. So if you would want to break it down into brackets, you have the top tier, which is, of course, Kako and Hughes. And then that next group, and right after that, you're looking at anywhere from 9 to 11 players. Big center icemen, 200-foot centers, playmaking centers. You got that one franchise type defenseman in Bowen Byram. And then, of course, you got the goal scorer, Cole Caulfield, who only 5'7", but when you score 72 goals, I don't think that really matters. So right. It's going to be, for everyone's opinions are different. I'm leaning more towards some of the NTDP kids because I saw them a lot more than I saw the WHL kids. But I just think also it's a record-setting program. You're looking at, the most one junior program ever had in the first round, the top 10, was 3 guys. That was back in the 60s or the 70s. This program is going to have possibly 10 guys in the first 2 rounds and maybe 6 in the top 15 alone. It's almost like an Alabama for, the NFL, the way the game create talent for that league. So it's going to be pretty historic. But again, it's no one really knows after the first 2 picks where they're going to end up.
Yeah. So you mentioned Caulfield there, and I wonder, even alluded to this with Hughes, although he's not as small as Caulfield, but he's neither a big guy. Despite what happened in the finals, it was weird to me. Like I thought a lot during the playoffs, there was this narrative that, in my opinion, wasn't exactly correct, that, oh, look out, like the big boys are back, big, hard, heavy hockey is going to win, it's the playoffs, and, forget about finesse. And I don't dispute that the Blues did have some heaviness in their game, but I still think the game is heading in the direction of speed and skill. And I think little guys like Caulfield, for example, I think the league is probably as open as they've ever been to not downgrading a player because he's 5'7".
Yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, all you have to do is look at the central scouting ranking that they, you know, it's basically a league-wide operation that they put out. And if you look back at, let's say, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, catch maybe like, I don't know, maybe like 10 to 15 players, 5'11 and under. Now, with the last couple of years, you're looking at 25, 30, 40, 50 kids listed under 6 foot, including goalies, which is crazy, considering that it used to be the standard. You have to have a 6'5" goalie in net. So I agree with you. I don't think when you – the fact that Alex DeBrincat, you know, second-round pick back in 2016 – he was. People were saying he might have been a byproduct of Connor McDavid and Dylan Strome in the junior program in Erie. And so he slipped in the draft all the way down to the second round. And in his second year in the league, he scored 40 goals. So I think that it's pretty much been proven that it doesn't really matter how tall you are, how strong you are in your skates. Just if you can bury the puck, you can bury the puck. And no one can do it better than Caulfield, that's for sure.
Do you think the Sabres will have a decision to make on him, i.e., do you think he'll get to 7? And if you were them, would you pounce on him, or do you have a better idea there?
Well, I think he might be there. I really, like I said, I really don't know. Unless, you know, these NHL teams, they keep their information pretty tight to the vest. They don't like to give out information. We have no idea what their draft boards look like. Everything that you hear from outside that room is speculation. So I do think, though, that the Sabres could use a goal-scoring winger. We're still waiting on Alex Nylander to see what he becomes. I want to see how Casey Mittelstadt develops. Is he going to be a wing or is he going to be a center? I think when you're looking at the wing, there's going to be three quality wings in that area that should be available. One is the Russian kid, Podkolzin, who might take a couple years to come to North America, but he's still an elite prospect. You got Caulfield, and then, of course, you got Matthew Boldy, who's a phenomenal 200-foot player. Some people have compared him to Mark Stone and Marian Hossa, which I think is something the Sabres need. They need a 200-foot guy that could also score as well beyond just putting up points in the offensive zone. So one of those three should be around there when the Sabres pick. But then again, I don't know if they're leaning more towards the centers. And, you know, we've got a group of about five or six centers after Hughes that have number one potential in the NHL.
Steve, I'm curious about your process when you're ranking these players. Is Podkolzin penalized because teams are scared that he won't come over for 2 years? Like, does that hurt his ranking, or are you just going on? Like, might he be the third best player in this draft, but he's being held back by the contractual commitments in Russia?
I would never let that impact the way that I rank players. It's basically what they do on the ice is all that matters to me. Obviously, there's information that happens off the ice that I can't control. But at the same time, like, you know, if a kid wants to stay in Russia, listen, the Russian fact is real. We haven't had a Russian picked in the top 10 or the top 5 from a Russian league since Malkin and Ovechkin back in 04. All the Russians taken in the top 5 since then have been import players who played in the Canadian Hockey League and the USHL. So I think that there is a fear because of the fact that the teams don't have the ability to keep tabs on them. They're worried that the Russian team might offer them more money to keep them there. You know, there's a kid in Russia right now, Kirill Kaprizov, a fifth-round pick of Minnesota, clearly one of the best prospects in the world, but he was drafted back in 2015, and the Wild can't get him to come over. So I think that might, you know, cause some apprehension on the side of on the part of the NHL GMs picking that early. But from a skill standpoint, the kid is phenomenal. Not only that, he's mean, he's aggressive, he's abrasive, he plays a North American style. So when I do my rankings, if I watch a kid, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40 times, and there's a consistent play in all three zones, and he's excitable and offers that type of dynamism, I'm not going to really dock the kid if he says, and, you know, his comments were pretty straightforward. He said, I'm comfortable here in Russia with the training facilities, and I'm under contract. When my contract is up, then I'm going to transfer over. But, you know, some teams have paid the price for having that Russian factor. You look at Evgeny Kuznetsov, you look at Vladimir Tarasenko. These are elite NHL players that teams passed on because they were contracted to Russian teams. So, you know, sometimes it's good to be patient.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'd love to know what Jason Botterill would think of that ahead of time. And I guess maybe, you know, if he has a choice to make, if this kid is around there at 7, maybe he won't be, maybe he will be, whether they would be comfortable with the current state of things taking someone who really won't be here for that long. Because, I mean, if I'm going to wait 2 years for whoever I pick, or at least a year anyway, then, you know, I don't know. I want the best guy, probably, is what I want to do there, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, you want the best talent. You don't want to maybe reactionary draft and draft someone that you think will address a current team need. You want to be able to, you know, I know that everyone wants to get these kids in on the ice as soon as possible and maybe fix problems that they might have at the NHL level. But at the same time, some kids take longer to develop than others. And I I don't see a problem with the kid being going to Russia and staying there and playing against older men for a couple of years and coming to America. You know, Pavel Datsyuk did that. I mean, I could go on and on, maybe the Russian players that did that. So, but he is a polarizing prospect. You know, his statistics weren't all that great. He bounced around from league to league. It seemed like at the end of the season he was out of gas at the Under-18 World Championship. So does that impact where he goes? I only knocked him down from 3 to 5. So, when you look at his overall body of work from August all the way up until now, it's really a phenomenal pre-draft resume. And, you know, I think he's going to be a quality NHL player, a really good one.
Steve Kornianos is the draft analyst, at the draft analyst on Twitter, also a contributor with the Sporting News. He's on the Western Hotline for just a moment or two more here talking about the NHL draft, which is this weekend in Vancouver. Goaltending, Team USA, speaking of the NTDP here. Spencer Knight, you write, best goalie prospect in over a decade. And we know how it goes in the draft. Goalies kind of just, I don't know, they get downgraded. Teams just don't invest high picks in them. How high do you think Knight could go?
I think there are several teams, and I've received word that several teams have him in the top 10 on their draft boards. It's just a matter of, you know, where that organization feels their needs are, what their goaltending prospect pool looks like. If they feel like he's closer to the NHL, then you look at Philadelphia. They have Carter Hart. He was drafted back in 2016. He's already going to be penciled in probably as the number one starter next year. So I think goalies are getting smaller. They care about quickness. They care about technical know-how. They care about flexibility. And listen, Spencer Knight, this kid it's almost like he's been designed in a lab. I mean, he's that superior a prospect when it comes to goaltending. But I could see why teams would be apprehensive. Look at the guy that just won the Stanley Cup. He was a third-round pick, Bennington. You know, Pecorino, Henrik Lundqvist, he's a seventh-round pick. So, yes, Carey Price and Marc-Andre Fleury were the last two goalies to go really high in the draft, and they're, you know, borderline Hall of Famers. But, you know, it trended the other way the last few years, and it's curious to see. I mean, I could see Knight going as high as inside the top 10, and then again, I could see him slipping to the late first round.
Yeah, there is also, and I'm learning this, my son is a 17-year-old goaltender, so, you know, I don't know what the future is going to hold for him, but what we've been hearing all along through this process, he was drafted in the O last year, and he's going to the USA National Camp here in Amherst coming up next week. So I don't know if you go cover that as part of your work, but, you know, if you're in town, let me know.
Sure.
But we've always heard it takes longer. You know, you look at the draft and there are lots of goalies that get picked and it's their second or third year of eligibility. Like, they don't go in their first year. Like, that guy is almost more of a rarity, like Knight, that is going. He's an 0-1 and he's going to get drafted in his first year. Teams seem to wait on goalies because, I don't know, they take longer to develop, whatever it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, the thing is, you could put a goalie in the ECHL and let him marinate there. We've had several goalies recently play in the ECHL and become number ones in the NHL. So if you have no room in the minor leagues, in the AHL level, if they're in Europe marinating there, if they're in college, I mean, they have a lot more flexibility with goalies and they can be patient. The only thing is, we got expansion coming. And so that's going to mean, the Seattle team is going to be dipping into the talent pool for backups. So if a team has a really good backup, they have to worry about him getting drafted in the expansion draft. So a way to basically fight that is to start developing your goalies now and just collect as many as you can.
All right, Steve. And for real, if you happen to be in Amherst next week, I'll be away for the back half of that camp, but I'll be around trying to catch as much of my son as I can. Make sure you hit me up. We'll get together for a coffee or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate this.
All right. Enjoy the work here, Steve. Steve Kornianos, the draft analyst with the Sporting News as well. He's got a mock draft up and a lot of in-depth coverage on the NHL draft. So if you're like most people, I think, whether you work in this business or not, and the NHL draft beyond the top couple guys is sort of a mystery to you, he's worth a follow for just paying attention to where guys are developing and who is being highly thought of. But when you get right down to it here, he's got a draft guide with, synopsis write-ups on all the guys. His latest mock draft went all the way through round 2. So I don't know if you feel the need to go further than that to have some idea what the Sabres end up doing on Saturday, knock yourself out. But Steve does a lot of good work. Again, Steve Kornianos, @thedraftanalyst on Twitter for NHL draft thoughts. All right. So that's, again, the current. We're kind of hopping back and forth between the future and the past today because, you know, obviously the draft is about the future. We get back on the other side of this break. Kevin Sylvester, who, you know, long time here in Buffalo media, worked for a long time at this station, also predating us being together here. We worked together at WBEN 20 years ago when the Sabres were in the Stanley Cup Finals, and Kevin's going to join me to kind of reminisce from his end of things down in the locker room area, and then the week that followed while he did my show while I was on vacation. I don't know that Kevin and I have ever really talked about all this, so I'm kind of excited that he has the time for us today. So stay tuned. Kevin Sylvester after this. I'm the Bulldog. This is WGR.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Glad to have you hanging with me today here on WGR. I am the Bulldog. Mike Shope has the day off today. It's a day for mostly reminiscing. We just spent a good 20 minutes there talking about the future in the NHL, talking about the draft with Steve Kornianos from the Sporting News. Joining us now on the Wester Hotline is someone to help us reflect. I thought of this guy this morning when I sat down to sort of try to write my way through remembering as correctly as I can what happened 20 years ago, because it was my wedding and I wasn't exactly paying attention to the hockey game. And I thought of Kevin Sylvester because we worked together at WBEN then. And he also, I think you did the show while I was on my honeymoon. Isn't that right?
Well, sort of. By the way, happy anniversary to you.
Thanks, Kev.
And I thought it was very big of Mike to take the day off on your anniversary. That was great.
That's how it goes, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, essentially, I did, yeah. So I didn't do the post. I think, I want to say Josh Gregory or maybe Brad Ryder was back in studio.
I think on the night of the game, yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so I was at the game, covering the game. But then the ensuing week, yes, I hosted one-on-one sports.
Right.
For you while you were gone, and man, did you miss a week.
I know. It's funny. I hadn't thought about this for a long time, and it's funny now. I mentioned this in the first hour of the show, Kevin. At one point, when I called in, and you remember Matt Franco, of course, who worked with Brad producing that show. I called on Wednesday night. Right, the 23rd, that's the night that the rally had taken place earlier in that day and Lindy yelled no goal and all that, right? And I mean, honest to God, I still don't know anything that's happened. And, Franco tells me, and I'm just thinking to myself, I get off the phone with him, and one of the thoughts I had was, am I going to have a job when I get back? Like, this seems like important stuff, and I'm not there. And I get back, you're like, sorry, it's Kevin's show now. Just because I was missing such important content, you know?
Yeah, no, well, yeah, anybody who's ever worked in our business, especially young when things like that happen, yeah, you never want to take a day off, right?
Right.
Because you think it's going to happen to you. You know what's funny? So I don't know where you want to go with this, but on that show, because I remember I read what you wrote there about Franco and how it was just going nuts. And how, when he told you we're trying to get Bettman on. So I want to talk about that for a second.
Good, please.
Because we put the request in every day to get Gary Bettman on the show. And as you can imagine, we heard zilch from the NHL. Just nothing. No response. Not like, hey, he's not going to come on. Just, they didn't respond to our request to have Gary Bettman on the show. And so Steve Cishan, whom you know, did a great impersonation, Hashioki. Steve posted something on Facebook about Hashioki. He and I decided, you know what, if he's not going to come on, let's act like he's on. So we, and again, you got to remember, we're in our 20s.
Right.
I would never do this today, right. And I can't believe we didn't get yelled at for this from Tim or Greg. And actually, matter of fact, I think Greg even thought it was funny. But anyhow, so I promoted, hey, coming up next hour, we're not going to have Gary Bettman on. 7:05, it will not be Gary Bettman. We went out of our way. Steve went to the other room, called him from the phone. And I remember the first, you know, we're specific on how we're going to do this. And he goes, get, you know, this terrible accent. And mm-hmm. just says, let me first say I'm not Gary Bettman, right? So we were clear in every time. Like, I would, you know, after a couple of questions, I would say, right now we are not talking with Gary Bettman.
Right.
Just, you know, very clear about it. And he took calls. Now, can you imagine, like, people didn't get it, right? All people heard was Gary Bettman is what we wanted for the gag, right?
Right.
And it was really, I got a kick out of it. I thought it was really funny. Probably wasn't funny to the fans who were calling up and saying, yeah, I yelled at Gary Bettman live on BEN about it. So, but that was really, like, you know, we were trying to get him on to answer questions. We tried for 4 days. So finally, on day five, we said, screw it. Let's have some fun with it.
Right. Yeah, I do remember hearing about that when I got back. I don't, or maybe even, you know, knowing that you guys had some sort of plans. And, of course, Steve used to do a lot of stuff like that back when he would have been at Channel 4, but still in the building. So you had access to him. Yeah, good times. Kevin Sylvester's on the West Hur Hotline. We worked together in 99 when the Sabres, you know, lost, finger quotes, game six to the Stars, and Dallas won the Stanley Cup. So the room, I talked to Paul an hour ago, Kevin, and his recollection is that while Bettman is on the ice during the presentation, Lindy is on the bench yelling. And I guess if I ever knew that, I forgot it. It seems like a big detail that I would have forgotten. But, of course, I wasn't here, so I wasn't taking notes, you know. Do you remember it that way? And just what are your observations, your recollections from being around the locker room and that post-game scene? It must have been pretty chaotic.
Chaotic is absolutely the word. And what I remember was going down they had an auxiliary press box, and I think I was next to Ed Kilgore, and we were like in the 300 level. I don't know what section it is, but the one, if you're looking, you know, from the normal press box, just to your right, you had access into the press box through a doorway, but that's where we sat. And I remember the goal being scored, and, you know, the doors open, which by the way, you know, when I worked for the Sabres many years later, I talked to the guy who manned the door. He doesn't work for the franchise anymore either. But he just told me about how they were just yelling at him to open the door. And he initially refused to open the door. And they, you know, it was open that door or we're going to remove you, blah, 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 blah. So he had to open the door. So don't anybody put the Buffalo guy to open the door. But anyways, as soon as we get off the elevator, all right, that freight elevator, go down to the locker room area, that's when you started hearing the rumblings. Foot was in the crease. Skate was in the crease. We're like, what? And so the interview room, we're heading to the interview room, and it was right across the doorway, right across the hall from the Sabres coaching room. And I could just hear the expletives and yelling from the Sabres coaching room behind that door. And we were ushered into the interview room waiting for Gary Bettman, whatever. So I never saw Lindy go out to the bench. I heard Lindy plenty in the hallway about this.
Yeah.
And the yelling. And it seemed like the wait was forever for someone to come speak to the media. And I forget who they sent in. I don't even think it was the head of officiating. It was somebody nobody knew at the time. And then started this whole rigmarole about this memo, right? That was this mysterious. Probably the delay was they were typing up the memo. I don't know.
Right, or deciding who's going to get thrown to the Lions there. Is John D'Amico maybe a name here? I feel like he had a role in this, but I'm not sure.
I just remember the look on this poor SOB's face where, you know, he had to sit there and answer questions from, Jim Kelly's in there. I mean, just I had to answer questions from all of us and what the heck just went on. And it just kept going back to that. All he kept talking about was this memo, and he had no answer. And then I will tell you, so after leaving that, it was, I don't think I even went into the Sabres dressing room because nobody was in there. They were all still angry. I don't recall going in that room, but I do recall going in the Dallas Stars room. I didn't go to interview anybody. I just wanted to go see it.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to walk in and see the Stanley Cup celebration, and they're over in the one corner, and it was just that's a lasting image I'll never forget, is standing in that Dallas Stars dressing room watching them. It would be the end closest to security. Everybody packed around the cup there with their wives, pouring champagne over each other and just going nuts and thinking, it wasn't a goal.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
a goal.
Yeah, I totally get that. That's the sort of thing I 100% would have done the same thing. I just want to see it. You know,
yeah,
how many times
yeah.
in your life are you going to have a chance to be in a locker room where a trophy's just been won like that? So just go, just experience it and, you know, file it away.
Yeah, that's actually the only time. Well, I shouldn't say so much. I've been in a Super Bowl winning locker room, but that was not in the building you covered, right? Not in familiar territory,
right?
What have you? So that was the first time, and I'll never forget the image. And you know, to see these superstars, Hall of Famers, now Hall of Famers, acting like little kids. I won't forget that. It stung, you know, because you
sure.
want the team you cover to win, you know?
Yeah.
In your city to celebrate that stuff. And then just the ensuing week afterwards, you know, and here's the thing, you know, when Buffalo won the game, we don't know. I mean, it was triple overtime.
Right.
It was still 1-1. And I remember having a conversation with James Patrick. We were on a road trip somewhere. And we started talking about that game, and he goes, I can't even think about that crossbar.
Right.
It haunts me still to this day. And I said, it would have forced a game seven. He goes, yeah, but I should have scored that one. I mean, we're talking about centimeters, right? And
right.
the shot goes in, and it haunts the guys to
right.
this day.
The guy, yeah, and he's played, like, what did he play, 1,300 games in the NHL? I mean, he had a righteous, long, great career, and, like, to be walking around with that has got to be really something.
Yeah, well, you think about it, as you said, all those games he's played, and he finally gets to that stage, that moment, and, you know, knows it's the only shot to do it. And you've got the shot, and you come so darn close to making it. That's tough.
All right. Well, Kevin, this has been really, really fun. I'm glad you made time. When I texted you this morning, I didn't know if you'd be on a fairway somewhere getting ready to cover a practice round of a PGA Tour stop or what with your gig with PGA Tour Radio. I know that seems like it's going really well, and we hear you on the weekends on Tee to Green. So, keep it all up, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Tell your lovely wife happy anniversary. She's a saint for putting up with you for 20 years.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Kev. Thanks. All the best to you and the family, too. All right, buddy?
All right. The same to you, my friend. See you.
It's Kevin Sylvester, longtime broadcaster in the area. Worked with the Sabres for a long time. Worked here for a long time. Worked with me at BEN. There you go. You got it all. Yeah, man. What a thing. Haven't had time for anyone yet. You got a quick story for me? 803-0550. We got a window here for, well, really, not a big window, actually. I think until about 6 o'clock. So we got a good hour and 15 minutes. If you want to chime in here, I got a lot of tweets I can get through in the meantime. But if you got a story you'd like to share about your recollection 20 years ago, Sabres game six, Dallas wins the Stanley Cup in Buffalo, I'd love to hear you. Lines are wide open for you at 803-0550, as well as 1-888-550-2550. I am the Bulldog. Mike Schoep has the day off today. We'll keep it rolling right after this on WGR.
I'm going to leave you with two words. It'll be the final two words for this summer. No goal.
That's Lindy?
That's Lindy.
Doesn't even sound, it barely sounds like him to me. I don't know. I'm old. My ears are bad. I'm not that old. My ears are bad.
No goal.
Yeah. That's the rally that happened. I looked it up today because I wondered if my timing, my recollections all made sense. And that day that happened downtown, that night I called in to my show from Mexico from my honeymoon to find out. That's where I found out that all this fire had been burning since Saturday night, Sunday morning, and I had no idea about it because I was away. You know, a world without smartphones. You know, it's you can really unplug. You certainly could then. It wasn't hard. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Spending a lot of today reminiscing about 20 years ago today, Game 6 Stanley Cup Finals. Dallas, controversial goal, no goal, as Lindy said there. Love your calls. A lot of people taking the opportunity to do that, so let's start picking them up and putting them down, shall we? Here is Scott first up this segment. Hi, Scott. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hi, Bulldog. I was a big Sabres fan back, much more than I am now. As a matter of fact, I had season tickets, but I graduated from Buff State early. I'm from downstate, and I ended up living up here now, but back then, I graduated from Buff State earlier in May, and that day was my graduation party, and I got my degree in the mail. And so I sat down to watch this. I didn't go to any of the Stanley Cup final games. I ended up watching it at my parents' house downstate, and I was with a buddy. We watched the entire game, and the last thing I saw was Gary Cohn yelling, "The Stanley Cup is in the heart of Texas." I turned off the TV. I had no idea what happened. We went out to a Denny's and hang out. Next morning, I get a call at about 7 a.m. from a friend of mine who I went to school with. He says, "Did you hear what happened?" I said, "No, I had no idea what happened." I don't even know if ESPN, he said, ESPN didn't really do anything. They kind of like, they didn't show a lot of that coverage of what really happened with everybody yelling and screaming. They kind of went away from that, it looked like.
Yeah.
From what he told me.
Yeah. I can't speak to it. I mean, I have no idea what happened. I didn't see any of it. I mean, it's easy. You know, you watch a sporting event that ends on a goal and it's not the result you want. And I think, you know, your normal reaction is just, okay, well, that's over. Turn it off. You know, if you don't need to watch the trophy presentation or anything, that's it. It's over. And I guess if anything we've learned in the 20 years that have passed from Game 6 to now is that it's probably not safe to do that anymore. we live in a world of replay now where, I mean, that's just all it's consumed us. You're always wondering, is that a good play? Is that going to be challenged? Are they going to have to review that? Like, that's where we live now. Tom is next up on WGR. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Chris. Thanks. I was a part of the studio crew at Empire Sports Network. And
all right.
Our policy in Hockey Hotline was always to go right in once the game was over, because that was a national broadcast, so we didn't have our own broadcast, so we didn't have all the post-game wrap-up or anything like that. So we went right on, and we were standing. We had to be in the studio for every single bit of overtime, because as soon as that goal was scored, we were going up.
Uh-huh.
We had to sit through the first and the second, and then all the way through there, through Patrick's goal, and we couldn't. I mean, at that point, once you get to overtime, there is no TV timeouts. It's a full whole slate of the overtime. So we're all standing there. We had to hold. You know, we couldn't rush out to the bathroom or anything like that. And I was standing there on a camera, and as soon as the goal went in, we went up, and it's just, you had to manage all your frustration and all your anger and everything like that. And I remember Brian Blessing going on and just being like, "Oh, well, there you have it. Dallas Stars have won the cup." And then they had to go on with the show, but with all that stuff was coming out really slow and all that other stuff that was happening. So we showed that angle about seven different ways we could show it. We got anything we could from the truck to show the different angles. And it was an interesting night. It was like one whatever in the
morning. Yeah.
And we had to stay through the whole game and whole night, and then, you know, had to cover all of it for everybody that was watching. So it was an interesting night.
I'll bet, Tom. I'm glad. I'm going to talk to Brad Ryder, who was, I'm pretty sure, anchoring our post-game coverage, because, again, I was getting married and jetting off to Mexico. But my recollection is that, like, I was able to listen to him for a bit of my ride to the airport, and I don't remember there being a lot of controversy. Like, the first half an hour or even 45 minutes of the postgame show, there wasn't, like, firm word that there was this debate or this controversy. At least I didn't catch it. I mean, whatever. I'd been drinking. It was my wedding. But it felt like it took a while for the whole thing to get traction.
Yeah, we were an hour show, at least, for that night, and for sure. But I still remember the shot. Like, Brian going on one shot, and he looked like a deer in the headlights. He's like, and he really didn't have too much to say, because we were all sitting, Mike and Brian, around set watching it on the little monitors. We're all watching it in the monitor in the studio, all standing in our position, just waiting to go on, waiting for them to give us the word that we're going up. And it was an interesting night, and I'll never forget it. And yeah, that Patrick goal that Kevin Sylvester just talked about. I mean, seriously, we were bemoaning that one, and then, you know, we did our show in the intermission, but then, you know, we talked about those, and then we went on to the third
right.
or third overtime. It was a great night.
I mean, yep.
That didn't go our way, but
yeah, good deal, Tom. Thanks. I appreciate you calling in with that account. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
All right, we'll take a timeout here, and if you're holding, hang there, man, because I'm gonna want to squeeze in as many as we can here, because the way this is broken down here, we ended up sort of fits and starts and never really got rolling with people able to share their stories, and we finally have some time to do that. So there are a couple lines open for you right now if you want to hop in line, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. 20 years ago, Dallas beats Buffalo, no goal, Brett Hull's foot in the crease. What do you remember about it? We'll take more of your calls after this. I'm the Bulldog. Mike Schoep has the day off. This is WGR.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.